today on Faithfully Fantasy.
So, my theory on Darna, she's more important than this. The Seven Den, they were kind of like a royal part of the dragons. And Andarna, because she is the last one, she is basically the queen of the dragons. What color are the feather tails?
Golden.
Are they? It's not clear, or at least I don't remember seeing that, yes, every single feather tail is golden. We just assume that all of them are golden because Andarna.
I don't know if you're right, but it's suspicious that Tan calls Andarna golden one, if there's loads of golden ones.
Exactly. More so that it made me think about this is the unconventional bonding. I think there wasn't like a democracy vote about this. I think it was like a royal decree.
Last episode, she said, maybe I should have been researching what was in the Espen Mountains. We have a network of caves that Solas was in. Marb was in the caves. Is this a breakaway hatching ground for orange dragons?
Hello and welcome to Faithfully Fantasy,
the husband and wife podcast talking all things Iron Flame.
Today we're going to be talking about chapters 13 to 16. And to be honest, this is an episode that I was dying to do, because when I was reading chapter 13, I came with this theory. I was just so like desperate to talk about it.
I'm acting shocked, but you have all week. You've been saying, I've got a theory and I'm not telling you it until we record the podcast. So last week we left Phyla in Montserrat, but today we're heading back to Basgaiath. Varys is a grade A arsehole. They go camping with the infantry. Sloane is gods awful on the mat, and Jacinia goes all in as scribe traitor.
Yes.
Let's go straight into chapter 13. But before you share your theory, even though I'm dying to hear it, I'm going to just quickly run through the epigraph.
Okay.
Though the chain of command may be consulted, the final say in any academic punishment or repercussions lies with the Commandant's office. Article 5, Section 7, the Dragon Riders Codex. And don't we know it? I don't think there's anything really significant here apart from showing who's in charge on the rider side, though we know who's in charge on the dragon side. Yeah. It just shows who's in charge on the rider side, and that is Varys.
Yes.
I think it again shows, we've talked about this before, but it shows the challenge when a lower ranking officer has a more powerful dragon, and how difficult that is for the chain of command on the rider's side. I suppose this is why the powerful dragons like Coda ultimately end up having a powerful rider like Melgren. But it's the bully riders who have weaker dragons that you have to watch out for, like Varys.
Yeah, exactly.
That's all I took from the epigraph.
Okay, so should we start now, chapter 13?
Yeah.
Do you have anything at the beginning?
Yeah, first few sentences, I think. So Violet asks Tan whether he knows how to raise the wards. He says, despite what you may assume, this is my Tan voice, it's awful, I am not 600 years old. She just figured she'd ask him in case he was holding back any dragon secrets or any secret dragon knowledge. He says, I'm always holding back secret dragon knowledge.
Yes.
But wards are not among it. So what's the secret dragon knowledge?
I think that might be included in my theory as well.
Ah, go for it then. tell me.
Okay, so I come with this theory is because Violet has been punished by Varys, because he is really basically desperate to see Andarna. He is constantly asking, where is she? I want to see her. Where is your little golden dragon? Violet, she is protecting Andarna about all everything. We know that. But the thing that starts with everything is like, what is the interest in Varys about Andarna? Maybe he knows that Andarna is from the Seventh Den of Dragons.
Already convinced of that. I think we spoke about that last week.
Yes. You read it as as a reader, that's like, yeah, it's obvious because maybe Andarna is from the Seventh Den. So Varys is maybe has suspicious. Within Varys, maybe at some point he was a Vennin, so they had this collecting knowledge, and maybe they're looking for a dragon of the seven then. But I was thinking, as a writer, what about if there's something more about Andarna? What else could it be? So what do you want me to do? Tell you what is the hell of the theory and then tell you how I came to this, or...
Yeah, what's your theory and then give me the receipts.
My theory is the Andarna is way beyond Seven Den. So she's more important than this. I think the Seven Den, they were kind of like a royal part of the dragons. And Andarna, because she is the last one, she is basically the queen of the dragons.
The queen of dragons, like Amari is the queen of the gods.
Yes. And this is when I start looking for more stuff about, is this possible? I start looking for little things, and every time I come with something, like, yes, 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 he was supporting this idea.
Yeah.
So how can I come to this conclusion? From the beginning, why there's no seven dragons, seven then dragons? Because it seems that all of them had been annihilated.
We thought that the Den belonged in the Barons.
Yes.
Didn't we?
So there was like from this General Daramore, like a special interest in the Barons. I was thinking as well, but how is possible that this guy can kill a whole Den of dragons? Because these are the only ones that
he
are not there.
The land.
Yes, but I was thinking, okay, we're talking about he annihilate the whole species of these dragons. Mm-hmm. It's maybe because there are not that many of the seven and then. So maybe they were so special, so powerful. They started channeling or taking all the power from these dragons. And maybe because there are not that many, that's why they go extinct. For me, it was like, okay, it's difficult that none of them would just like spin away or running away. Why? Because there are not that many. So I'm like, okay, so that could be one thing. Then
also, like, just to support that, magic likes everything in balance, doesn't it?
Yes.
So if you're a really powerful dragon, perhaps there's fewer of them.
Yes, but they are really powerful.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
That's what I think. Yeah, exactly. So that's one thing. So I'm going like step by step.
Okay.
So the other thing, Andarna, she has been inside an egg for centuries. What can other dragons can do that? Just to say...
I don't know. We don't know much.
We don't have that much.
It's part of this dragon, secret dragon knowledge that Tern knows about, I'm sure.
Yes, but it's something that... It seems that it's not very common. There's no other example that, dragon egg can stay there centuries. So we don't know exactly how long it could be. But
no idea.
It's like really weird.
Is it weird though? Well, yes, I guess.
It is.
I don't know.
Yes. So just trust me in this one. It is.
All right, Kaori. Gonna
yes.
start calling you Professor Kaori.
And Andarna.
The Dragon
subject.
Watcher.
Okay, so that's one thing. It lasts for a very long time. However, she knew everything was around her because there was like one of the reasons that she heard because about violence as well. There's other stuff that I will come back later on. Not today, maybe, but that's another theory cooking right now. The other thing, what color are the feather tails?
Golden.
Are they? We know this about Andarna because she is the only reference, but there's actually reference. Every single feather tail is golden.
I don't know if there is, but she's instantly recognizable to everyone as a feather tail.
Yes, we know that she is a feather tail, but the thing there is not clear, or at least I don't remember seeing that, yes, every single feather tail is golden. We just assume that all of them are golden because Andarna. Mm. And because in Ironflame, there's a part when they said the Imperium knows when a dragon is going to be what kind of then. Like, they knew what color it would be Andarna before or something like this.
No, only the eldest of the den knows when a dragon of that den is born. And so they know what color it's
it
going to
be.
But... You're right. I don't know if you're right, but it's suspicious that Tern calls Andarna Golden One if there's loads of golden ones.
Exactly. That was my other point. How Tern's called Violet. called a silver one. Why? Because she's probably the only one there's with Hal Silverhead.
Apart from Sori, we know Sori.
Yeah, but it's not Hal Silver. She has just like a string. Yeah, exactly. But Violet is unique. Mm. So why he calls golden one? So, and then if all the feather tails are golden.
Yeah, I like it. I do like it. I just don't know. I don't know, but I like it.
I see how more stuff to.
Yeah, no. And it's made me think of the color purple. She's kind of purple, isn't she? And purple is a very royal color. It's like the color that's.
Yeah, because in Iron Flame, we start to see that she is like changing color. Mm-hmm. That's why I was thinking as well, maybe the seventh then is like the origin, all the dragons. So from all the dragons from different colors came from this one. Mm-hmm. So they are like the original ones, because they are the first one, maybe the royal ones. And Darna, we call her golden one, and gold is always like related as well to
royalty.
So we're like, okay, that might check my list about this theory. The other thing is she was able to stop the time, and that was something that even said that it was surprised, because it's something that has not been seen before.
But he's never seen a feather tail before, but I think it was a rare ability. Yeah,
and it's not very common when you start to see like other sickness, other stuff the other dragons can do. Stop the time is something that it requires a lot of power.
Did she stop time while she was in the egg as well? And that's how she managed to... No, that would be totally wrong. It would be the opposite way around. I need to go to bed. Did she speed up time? I don't know. That's what I mean. Can she manipulate
as far
time?
As we know, she can just stop it or make it really slow.
We don't know, do we?
Well, that's why...
Can she just manipulate time?
Yeah.
She can't anymore, can she? Because she's grown up.
Yes. More so that it made me think about this is the unconventional bonding, because Stern was the first one to bond to Violet. And then when she was going to record it, Andarno said, my name is Andarno.
Andarno Urim.
Yes. She bonded later on. And then they had this meeting with Imperium just to decide if that's going to be allowed or not. We hear a lot of the time that hatchling are not allowed. There's something forbidden to bond.
I think that they were discussing whether Ten was allowed to keep the bond, because she's the head of the den. I think her decision stands. Nobody can tell Andarno what to do.
I think there wasn't like a democracy vote about this. I think it was like a royal decree that Andarno was saying. They know who Andarno is, and Andarno knows as well. Because I think this is kind of like an ancient magic that she is involved. Mm. So she has a lot of power. There's a lot of stuff that she's not trying to violate, but she's like little by little given the stuff. So, you know, the subject of the banning, like the elder, they're not agreed what to do. Like she will fight, she will know, she will send. So every single one has something to talk about it, like have their own opinion. But on this occasion with Andarno, what was the reason that every single one of them said, oh, yeah, you can go for it. You can do it. It would be weird if it was like an unanimous decision. That's why it made me think that was Andarno like, who was saying, this is what's happening and this is what you wanted to do. So that is like one of the strongest themes for me.
Yeah, I think you can think about it two ways. I like it. When it comes to a royal feather tail, so there's two ways, isn't there? Like either you just let it do what it wants because you have no say, or wouldn't you like do your best to protect that?
Mm-hmm.
So why are they not doing more to protect her as a queen of dragons, if
because
that's the case?
She's still the queen.
But she's 2 years old, like she's a toddler.
Yeah, but still. A lot of countries, if they had like a king, they had like advisors and everything.
Yeah, but it's not the toddler that's Zulu. That just hasn't happened since like that 8-year-old king of England, like years ago.
She's basically like an ancient queen. She hatched 2 years ago, but by this time she's more than 600 years old. She's been 600 years in an egg, so she's developing. So her mind, her power is still like one of the ancients or all the dragons.
I love it. I totally believe. I can totally believe that she is queen of dragons.
Yeah. The last bit that I have about this is when they were talking about the undevelopment muscles. I think that is not because she didn't develop in the dreamless sleep. I think it's just because she being part of the kind of like a royal family of dragons, there was nobody above them, so they never had a rider. Because they never need a rider, or they never had a rider, they didn't have this need to develop the muscles to hold somebody or to do flying or other stuff, because in the end they were like royalty. So all the dragons,
that's super interesting. Was it both wings? Because I just had,
I think it was like one of the wings, but still it's not just, it's not strong enough,
but she
to
can't,
hold a rider.
Wouldn't it, if it was like a normal evolutionary thing, wouldn't it be both wings? Because there is a symmetry and things like that. They wouldn't just have one wing, would they?
Yeah, in the end, it's just she's not allowed to call a rider, or she's not physical.
Yeah, I would feel like that more if it was both wings. Mm-hmm. Maybe I'm wrong, but I had a feeling it was just one wing, and it was because she kept waking up.
Yeah. Well, that's what I said, but that's what I mean. Maybe it's not because she's still waking up. It's more like genetic thing, because she'd been part of the royal family of dragons. Maybe she wasn't flying all the time. She wasn't having a rider or anything like this. So because all of this, I think if this happened, and then we find out that, yes, she's like a queen of the dragons. She had a massive power. This will come to this general all the venoms, because maybe she is the last one of the den. And I don't know if there will be something else about it. You know, like when they try to make the wars, they need like the last friend of the seventh den. I don't know if the venom needs something about this ancient dragon as well.
Maybe. I think it's pretty clear that Varys knows that she's more than a feather tail.
Yes.
Because he says, dragons, you wandered a feather tail, a dragon that hasn't been seen for hundreds of years.
Yes, exactly.
And it's not the feather tails that haven't been seen for hundreds of years, it's that seventh den that haven't been seen for hundreds of years. I do tend to think, so I'm convinced that their den was in the Barrens. I really like your theory, and she could totally be royal. The only things that I'm leaning against are kind of like, one, the wing, the underdeveloped wing. I feel like that's another hint to Violet and Andana being the same. They have struggles, they have incredible power, but in terms of their like physicality, they have challenges. And I think it's mostly a replication of that, that they're the same. There has to be a balance in magic. I really like it though, especially the fact that she's slightly purple. I think it shows that. I think second honor is what her name means. Feels royal. I like your theory.
Yeah. So, have to see maybe even on XSR we get more clues about it. But definitely, Andarna, she knows more so than what she tells to Violet. Like we were telling before, Tern holds a lot of secrets about the dragon kind.
Yeah.
Maybe this could be one. But I honestly think they know, even Tern knows about everything about Andarna.
Oh, Tern doesn't know about Andarna.
No, I think all the Imperium, so Coda, knows exactly everything
about
Andarna. Yes.
So it gets them into trouble, it gets Violet into trouble, the fact that Varys is so desperate to see Andarna and she doesn't turn up to flight manoeuvres. This is Varys again pulling rank on Tern. Because of what Tern did to Solas, he took his eye out. And I'm still so desperate to know why he took his eye out, but I think it's something to do with Naelin. So they're ordered to the practice grounds as Carr and Varys are waiting for them. Tern kind of gives her a choice, doesn't he, about whether she wants to go there. And she says that she can handle whatever he wants to throw at me as long as it keeps Andarna safe. And like, kind of linking back to your theory, Andarna knew that Violet would be the one, because she would protect her and she would keep her secret safe. We learn a bit more about Carr, don't we? Professor Carr. He's got thin white hair that's kind of flopping around. We know, we don't at this point in the book know his signet, but we do know that he's a fire wielder.
Yes.
And I just, like, Carr is one of those people that I feel like he's got little signet syndrome, where his signet's so pathetic. Like, I can't, can you think of a worse signet than fire? You've got a dragon to breathe fire. Why do you need fire?
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure it's not going to be as big as the dragon one.
Yeah.
So,
oh, gosh, so embarrassing.
As big or hot, the
so
dragon fire.
He's got little signet syndrome, and he's making up for it by bullying the students, essentially. I had a theory in Fourth Wing that his signet was something cool, like detecting signets or something like that. Maybe like Bodhi's counteracting signets, and that's why he was in the position he's in. He's just a fire wielder. I'm sorry, no offense to fire wielders. I can't say it. But all the offense to fire wielders. I'd be so gutted if I crossed the parapet, nailed the gauntlet, survived presentation, went through threshing, bonded a dragon, made it through all the mat challenges, and I ended up being a fire wielder. Wah, 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 wah. Anyway, Carr. And he has a dragon called Brugan, which I think means brag in Scottish Gaelic, which is really funny because
brag about
he's got
what?
Nothing to brag about because he's got little signet syndrome. Obviously, why we find out a little bit more about the Empyrean and the rules of the Empyrean. So while Tern's bound by the Empyrean, Violet has to follow commands. There's obviously some deal, and again it comes back again to the fact that you have a situation where Varys is a very high ranking commander of the army,
mm-hmm.
the military, and Violet is a very low ranking officer. Well, she's not even not, she's a cadet.
Yes.
And the power balance between the dragons just way off. Like Solas, he has like little rider syndrome. Why he's got this tiny, not powerful. Although he is powerful. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's probably part of a deal to counteract the fact that maybe if you've got a lower ranking rider bonded to a stronger dragon or a more powerful dragon.
Yeah, it's kind of like a little bit of balance, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. There's some weird thing about Varys here where he says, Tern calls him barbaric. And then Varys says, I only want to observe her and don't want to do anything barbaric. Mm-hmm. And it was like he was reading Tern's mind. It probably wasn't. It was just a weird thing.
Yeah, I didn't see that, to be honest. But
I'm on, like, intrinsic watch because, obviously, I'm, like, searching for the foreshadowing of Zayden being intrinsic.
Yeah.
And that one just was a bit weird for me.
Well, it's not like Tern talking directly to him, isn't it?
No, it's not, but Tern's talking to Violet.
Yeah.
Unless Tern is also talking to Solas and saying, like, back off, bitch. And
yeah,
Solas is saying,
like, Tern saying, this is barbaric.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Probably that's what it is. But they don't care at all about her getting her to aim. They just want to burn her out. So I think Carr doesn't. You can see a good side to Carr in this. And
he's constantly saying, I haven't seen her doing more than this, and she is already nearly going for double.
Yeah, so it's clear that he doesn't actually care about Violet, though. Mm-hmm. I think he cares about two things. He cares about the fact that Violet is a powerful fighter, and they would lose that if she were to burn out, and it would be a shame. And two, I don't think he wants to upset General Sorengale. I think he's a bit scared. It's kind of like upsetting your boss, isn't it?
Yeah, but Carr is conscious as well that if something happened to Violet, Tern will die, Sidon will die, Sagaer will die. So he knows that it's not just Violet.
Mm. It's a chain reaction.
Exactly. The other thing that it caught my attention was that Varys, he was saying, she can just take in just fine, like he knows. And even Violet is like, it's like he knows that.
Like he was there at Rhessan.
Yeah. And I was like, okay, maybe he was there, or just, again, this Venin, like, sharing knowledge about everything.
If he was there, where was he? Because we know that two Venon died. I don't think he was, and then the other one vanished, but that was the...
There were three die, one escape.
Yeah, but that the one that escaped was the basically the general, the Maven.
Yeah.
I think, like, she didn't write it down on the page, but everything is pointing to Varish being a Venon.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think he was a Venon at this point. I thought in my last read that he might turn Venon when after Tern humiliates him. And I know I've said this before, so I won't go into it too much. But this part could be, if he is Venon already, this could be part of that hive mind again. The Venon that were there saw what she could do, and now every Venon knows what she can do. And that's why the general of the Venon, Maven, wants her bringing to him alive. She has 26 strikes an hour. And at one point, I think Tern roars at some point or something, doesn't he? And Carr drops his notebook. And it made me think of Kaori from his notebook.
Yeah, but Carr has good reason for that, because imagine Tern, one of the biggest ones, and obviously as well one of the most fierce ones, first is roaring to you.
So she burns out, and Carr is like, we're done, we're definitely done. He tells her to get back to the courtyard, or Tern to fly her straight back to the courtyard. He doesn't, he flies her to the river, where he's already asked for help. So Glein.
Mm-hmm.
Which means clean, which is like cleaning memories, arrives. Bodhi and his green dragon, Kord? Can't remember.
Kord, I think.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they're by the tree where she hid when the Marked Ones were having their first meeting in Fourth Wing, which is kind of a nice throwback. I don't know if it's... I don't think there's any significance. I don't know if there's any significance in the fact that they're there.
I don't know if maybe it's just to put the reader back to like a place that we know already. But you know something else that it was calling my attention when Violet was tracking this lightning, and the last one when her arm goes like stuck and then she couldn't let it go. I always thought that she was always like pointing out where she wanted to send the lightning, and she just holding, and then the lightning strike. But apparently, she just kind of like whipping the arm. So
did she? I missed that.
Yeah, she said that she just like send the arm, like sending the lightning, and then straight away she just like retrieved the arm. But this time, because she was so burning, she couldn't. So the nerves and the muscle get stuck. And when it got stuck, the lightning was just constantly there. I was like, wow, that would be like a really good moment. If you hold like basically a lightning striking something, that would be incredible. Fried. Yeah.
I just realized why they might have been by the tree. It came to me just then. Because that obviously is where Marked Ones met quite frequently. It was somewhere where Bodhi and Imogen and Aya would know where to go.
So it's like a common point to meet in.
Yeah.
Was by the lake, which was really handy for Tern.
The river. Yeah.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about this is she doesn't just burn out. You know, like burnout for us is when you're
really
mentally burnt out. Like you've been stressed, you've been anxious, and you've worked so hard and just not stopped. But this is a physical burn. She's sunburnt. So she looks sunburnt for the rest of her classes, which is really interesting.
Yeah. Well, I think she said that her bone was burning. So I don't know if she meant like literally was burning inside.
Burning from the inside out.
Yes.
Yeah, but her skin is sunburnt as well, so she looks red. We know Thomas and Jacek, so we're away from the river now and back in classes. Jacek is fighting on the mat, and Rhi gets annoyed, and he's obviously in a really bad mood, and we find out that he's the younger brother of the guy that was killed by Markham.
Yes.
Thomas is the squad leader that we later go camping with in RSC, and Jacek's brother we know died because he was asking for records of a border attack.
Yes, something that I found that like a little bit between funny and weird, that we've seen, yeah, there's Violet talking with Ray, then Riddle comes, like, make a joke to Violet. Violet nearly kills him because she's kind of, like, paranoid.
Really stressed.
Yes, exactly, that she's just looking everywhere after the attack that she had. And then when they start to go into physics class, they got kidnapped.
she didn't notice.
That doesn't make sense. They nearly killed Riddle because she's paranoid, and then when actually happens, she just chill out.
Yeah. there's a couple, because that is really lucky that they are going to land now. If they're not actually being kidnapped by Varys or by Daenerys, but I just remembered something. When they're back, and I'm skipping all over the place, but when they're at the river, mm-hmm. and Bodhi comes, he's like, "Who did this to you? This will never happen again." And I got vibes that Bodhi likes Violet.
Mm-hmm.
So you know you're on the Bodhi's a bad guy train. I might be on the Bodhi has feelings for Violet train.
More reasons to betray Zayden?
Maybe. This won't happen to you again. Like, what's he planning to do? And Tern's like, tell him I'll handle dragon matters or whatever.
Yeah.
I've changed my Tern voice 3 times in this episode. I don't know. I got vibes that Bodhi quite likes Violet. I don't think there'll be a love triangle because Rebecca Yarros openly hates them, but there could be a part of that villain story.
That's what I mean. There could be like a catalyst for Bodhi because he's always been kind of like the second after Zayden. So maybe, Zayden has the best dragon, has the best signet, they have like the best woman,
the best chair.
Yeah, best house. Best. So it could be like, it's not fair. I wonder. I can have it when Zayden is still alive.
Yeah. Just add it to the list of reasons why Bodhi might be upset with Zayden.
Yes.
Right. I have a really important question. I think I've asked this before. Why is Violet so bad at physics? Physics is an academic subject.
That's another thing that just doesn't make sense at all. And
there's a reason.
Violet's personality.
There's a reason, though, isn't there? We just don't know what it is yet. So the thing that we keep hearing about is Zayden is her gravity. She needs gravity. Mm-hmm. It's a lot about gravity. Gravity is a physics thing. I just don't understand. There's something there. Can somebody please explain to me why Violet Sorengil is bad at physics? What am I missing?
It's one of those things that doesn't make sense for the reader. It might make sense for the writer. Because the same with the Sorengil research about feather tails, it just doesn't make sense. The Violet is not feeling like...
But there's going to be a reason. So Imogen is nice to Rhiannon as well.
Yeah, I think maybe she starts to feel more integrated as well. There's not just like Mark ones and the other ones. Mm. So it's a little bit like all together, same thing.
She says you're doing a good job as squad leader, by the way. It was good to get the more time on the mat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Rhea is really good squad leader, yes. Mm. She's going to be a really wing leader. if there is wing leaders and players on house.
Well, I think they're going back to Basgaiath, aren't they, after that fight?
I don't know what's going to happen.
Do you think, are they going to be in Aresha or are they going to be in Basgaiath? Well, the wards are in Basgaiath and Violet says we need to stay, or Zayden says we need to stay here because you're safer here. Safer from what? You need to be protected from himself. From me. Okay, chapter 14. Epigraph.
Mm-hmm.
There is a natural distrust that must be overcome between infantry cadets and riders. This exists mainly because riders will never trust that infantry has the courage to hold the line when dragons arrive. And infantry will never trust that dragons won't eat them. Major Ephrenda's Guide to the Rider Squadron. Unauthorized edition. Again, why is it unauthorized?
I guess maybe it's because they need like approbation from generals or other people. Yes, and then... No, it's not happening. They're busy doing other stuff.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I feel like there's something there.
Yeah. The beginning of the chapter 14 is the Well, they're being kidnapped, but it's just all part of the exercise for RSC. Good thing, I guess.
What does RSC stand for again?
I think, well, Rider Survivor Course, mm-hmm. something like this.
Testing you. Oh. The course humans wouldn't have to take if they would simply stay seated, in the words of Turnenach.
True. But this is another thing, because they drink something, and then with this little thing, they just completely unplug from the dragons. So they had no connection with the dragon, which means had no signal or anything, no power. So they're just regular people. Now, even Violet said that she feels now so fragile. Average. Or
yeah, weak. Would you drink it? Would you have drunk that?
Why? I had the power of my dragon, so I can do a few magic tricks, for example. I have my dragon as well. Why I would drink that?
No, I mean, would you have drunk it if you didn't? Would you have drunk the water?
Not sure.
I 100% would have done. Like, I would just be like, oh my God, we've woken up in the middle of nowhere. I'm thirsty. I'll drink it. There's no way I would have suspected that they would have spiked.
I think it's just because you think that, yeah, the exercise, maybe it's just you need to go back to Pasgaid and that's it. So you don't think, or maybe you didn't know there's something
no one
they can
knew
do
that,
after.
That, yeah, that was a new development this year. So even if the course had leaked out, no one
Nobody
would know
knew.
About the serum.
Exactly, and why it's not being used for other stuff, like, or maybe they are.
Oh, they're 100% developing it to control Jack.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, and other people.
Maybe as a weapon for the Venom to just knock down the power.
Stops them from channeling from the ground, I think.
Yes.
A really interesting quote here from Professor Grady, who I can't work out if I like Professor Grady. I think I do, but he doesn't go to Aracia, so he's obviously his dragon is one of the ones that wants to stay in Avar.
Yes.
There are times in your careers when you'll need someone in the air and someone on the ground. And do you know what that made me think of?
Well.
Violet and Zayden. Violet channeling from the sky, Zayden channeling from the ground.
Yeah, interesting. Didn't see it like that.
I feel like there was something, it just made me think, is that Violet in the sky, Zayden on the ground? Is he going to continue to work for the good, but channeling from the ground instead. And you come at them from both directions.
Yeah. The thing that we don't know so far is how you can channel from the ground, can corrupt your mind, because we know that you're losing your soul. But that means that you lose, everything, your love, or all the stuff that you're doing for, because he's doing it for Violet. He's not doing it because he wants to be powerful or anything like that.
Yeah.
He's doing it for surviving and for love. So I don't know if that make any difference.
That just stood out to me. I thought it was an interesting sentence to put in. And I'm sure there will be a time very shortly in Violet's career when she needs someone in the air and someone she can trust on the ground.
Yes.
Back to the connection blocker, though. I do think this was developed to control the Venom. Violet tries to figure out what it is, and she says, her mind is searching for the things that it could be. I am certain she will work out what it is, because she's excellent at potions.
Potions.
Not Harry Potter. Poisons. And she appreciates the... What does he say?
She
said, art of potion making.
Well, she described it as a crisp and cold with something pungent, earthy and bitter floral.
Yeah.
And I don't know, obviously it's stuff from the ground, like flowers.
Yeah.
But I don't know if maybe it's a kind of flower that grows close to where all the dragons are born, but they're egg, dragon shell or something, and mix it with the magic.
Yeah. I think this whole land nav course is amazing. It's the first time we see them work with infantry. You'd think that they'd be doing way more of that. So I expect that they would do more of that in third year as well, because you have to learn to work between the quadrants. I also think that it's a very dangerous job being a field scribe. Because the scribe doesn't know how to protect themselves. They're just there, taking notes.
Yes.
And in a real war situation, that's a very dangerous job, isn't it? It's like, I guess it's like being a journalist in a war zone, and you see them with their, like, blast jackets and hats and stuff, and they're there, and they're very brave to be there.
Yeah, well, the thing is, they're with a knife, and maybe they had a curse to survive, or if they would be scribed, they will go to, like, in the battlefield to record everything, or there would be people that would be using the archives. So I don't know if maybe they're like section, like, what would you like to do? I would like to be in the field.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Yes. So she's the only one in her year that she's not training, that's not training for the adept path, which is like the serious librarian path. She's going out in the field. But that, to me, is quite a big decision as a scribe. Yeah. And it's out, they obviously have a different type of lessons because she's included in this one. You also have two infantry cadets. No, sorry, two healer cadets that are there.
Yes.
And I just, like, wonder what it's like in the other quadrants. What do you think it's like in the infantry quadrant? Do you think there's... I don't think as many people die, because I think she says that in the next chapter, but is it brutal or is it just...
I think this is just more like army, basically. So like a regular army. So they
army
have
training,
weapons.
So less death.
Yeah.
But do you think they do hand-to-hand, Matt, and if they kill them, they kill them? Or do you think it's less?
No, I think maybe if I choose to go to infantry... there's maybe no risk that you will be turned into a venom, because magic is not something that you're looking for.
That's what I think too. I think that the only reason they allow that Bazgard, the Riders Quadrant is a death factory, is because they're so shit scared that all the failed riders are going to turn, if they're not powerful enough, they're going to turn venom.
Yes.
Because they've got a taste for power. Interesting that, so when I read it said the dragons from the other wings will be hunting you, and some of the unbonded have joined too. And the second time I read this book, I read that as unbonded riders, because that's the only way that we've heard of them. But it's obviously unbonded dragons, and obviously that sentence is there because of Bade. But for some reason I was thinking, why are the unbonded riders still there? Why didn't they
come back to next year or something?
Yeah, but again, this is the thing, why would they let the unbonded survive? Because you've got that far, wouldn't you be tempted a little bit to channel from the ground? Or am I just a bad guy? Because like Sawyer, they let him just go and come back, didn't they?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, he wasn't the only one. This is something that it happens. I don't know how long they stay there, because obviously there's like a time when the door is still open that you can kill a rider.
Maybe you just can stay the whole time and you just do all the shit chores.
Yeah.
You just mop the floors Filch.
Clean toilets, cooking, and then next year, try again.
I find Riddick a bit of an asshole.
He is
a bit of an arsehole, isn't he? I love him. He's one of my favourite characters. But a couple of things, like Riddick and Ursia saying that they're the squad to be. He's flirting a bit with her. And I don't think Riddick and Ursia are going to be a thing. I think Riddick is going to have a love interest that we've already met. But I need to do a bit more research. Riddick says something that I fundamentally agree with, and I've always disagreed with this. Most people say you've got to earn respect.
Yeah.
He said, want my respect, earn it. And I absolutely disagree. And it gets me so annoyed when I hear people say you've got to earn respect. In my opinion, you should give everyone respect until they give you a reason to not respect them. So I think respect is something that you can lose, but I do not think it's something you should be able to, you should have to earn. Like, I can't trust. Yes. Somebody, you don't trust somebody as soon as you meet them, do you? Trust is something that you either feel immediately or you earn it. Mm-hmm. But respect for me, and I just hate this. It just gets me so annoyed. And you can tell I'm getting annoyed by it, but I love Riddick, and this like just made him slip down a little bit in my estimations, because you shouldn't have to earn respect. You should be respected. That is a like part of being a human. You should respect other humans until they give you a reason to not respect them anymore. And that just really annoys me. And a lot of people go by that rule. I hear it all the time. You have to earn respect. But you absolutely shouldn't. You should be given respect.
Yeah, that's just good part of manners in the end. So it shouldn't be something that you're expecting that somebody has to earn it.
Yeah.
But yeah, and this saying really is kind of like a divo, because he called this, I think it's Calvin, the one who called Donbass when he was discussing with Ray.
Mm.
And then Calvin was like, oh, show some respect for the rank. And Ray was like,
you want my respect? Earn
it. No, he said, like, you say your rank means exactly jack and shit to me.
Yeah.
Like, wow.
I think he's feeling threatened because he's, I think they're probably feeling threatened because he's, oh God, I'm going to get so much hate from this. But Riddick is a bit average, isn't he? Like, he's an ice wielder, and yes, that's better than fire wielding, but it's not particularly, there's lots of people that are ice wielders, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He's not the best at, he's not the best on the mat, he's not the best on in battle brief or physics. He can do it, but he's not, he's just average, isn't he?
He's just the clown of the group.
Yeah, he's a kind of a bit of a clown. I really, really like him. And I was, later in the book, spoiler alert, but I was really, really upset when I thought he was going to die when the arrows go pin him to the cliffside.
Yeah.
And I do think he's going to die, and I will be upset because he's a bit of comic relief. He's like a normal person. He's chilled. But he feels threatened, I think, because he's really good at land nav, but he's not as good as the infantry. So he's better than Sawyer, he's better than Violet, he's better than Rhee. That's the one thing he's good at, and or the one thing he's better than his squad mates at. And then all of a sudden they get grouped with land nav, with infantry, who've been doing land nav for the past 2 years. And that, I think he feels a bit defensive because he's been good at it and now he's not.
No, the only thing that he is the best in the group, and then he's not.
So I kind of get it, but that respect thing, like, I'm sorry, Riddick, you're going to have to earn my respect back. No, I still respect him because I just respect people. But
yeah.
I might not like people, but you kind of have to respect them. Bade is on the hunt. Jack Barlow's orange dragon.
So you think that when they were talking about unbonding dragons, he was like one of the ones they mentioned? Because at this point, we're still thinking that Jack Barlow is dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, she said that on purpose, unbonded, because otherwise people would be like, why is Bade there?
Yeah.
But he's not actually unbonded. He's still bonded. Mm-hmm. But you can, there's some hints. There's the dank breath and hazy golden eyes. Do we think hazy eyes are a clue to him being not in control?
Could be.
Something we should look out for. If we ever meet Mob.
Yeah, another dragon that we think that has vernon links.
Yeah, Solas.
Yeah.
Maybe. We might have missed that. He might already have been described. We'll have to keep an eye out. We do learn a bit more about oranges here. So oranges are the most unpredictable dragons. We know that. The northern Esbens are believed to have been the hatching grounds of the orange dragons before unification. So true to their unpredictable nature, they are often found in new valleys in their range. So my theory here, which has just come to me, last Iron Flame episode.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I've got so much to say. And it's come to me and I haven't written this down, so it's all a little bit, maybe a bit wacky. Last episode, she said, maybe I should have been researching what was in the Esben Mountains.
Mm-hmm.
We have a network of caves that Solas was in.
Yes.
Mob was in the caves. Is this a breakaway hatching ground for orange dragons? Because they're unpredictable. Maybe they don't all have their eggs in the Vale. Maybe because of their unpredictable. It says the northern Esbens are believed to have been the hatching grounds of the orange dragons before unification. Though true to their unpredictable nature, they often found new valleys in their range. Perhaps the Signy flyers were looking for something. He was found in a cave. The Venon are potentially looking for orange dragon eggs.
Yes. So maybe, yes, because they need the eggshells to make something.
Yeah, make the alloy.
Yeah.
Maybe. And is this why there's a bit of a link between orange dragons and Venon?
Yeah.
I've got another thing. If you have not read the bonus POV chapter from Zayden, switch off for the next 30 seconds. There is a theory. Somebody has commented on one of our reels.
Mm-hmm.
That Imogen potentially played a role in bringing down the wards at Montserrat. Because she was missing and she was on her way back and she could have had time. There's possibly something here that indicates she's got an orange dragon that links to some unpredictability from yes. Imogen. Right, you're not going to know, but you can switch back on now. Yeah, I think there's orange dragon eggs in the northern Esben Mountains, and that's what that flyer was looking for. That's what the Venon are looking for. And that's why there's some weird link between the orange dragons and the caves around the Esben Mountains.
Yeah, I mean, it could possibly happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Okay, and the last thing I want to say about Bade is he has a poison-barbed tail, which is the same type of tail that a wyvern has.
Yes.
So that was a matter of need, and I wonder if Bade always knew that he would need to...
join the wyverns?
Yeah.
Maybe. For me, there's just one thing to mention, and this one, because when they're just trying to find the exit, Bade find that. And then Violet is the one who said, like, okay, don't look at him, just kill her looking down. They will recall, remember everything the Kaori told her about how to treat an orange dragon when they're in front. So Violet, she was kind of like getting nervous, but then at the same time, she will remember that, hey, wait a minute, I'm bonded to one of the deadliest dragons in the continent.
Who we find out later was not actually that far away.
Yes, but she was like telling to Bade, at least mentally, or she was thinking, yeah, it's right, you might hate me, but I belong to Tern. And then Bade, once she said that mentally, he was just like looking to other way. So he just not paying attention to Violet anymore. So it's kind of like, did he hear what she was saying to him? Or was maybe turned because it was close, and then it was telling, watch out, and I'm watching you.
I have to look this up, because this comes back to the fact that potentially she has some deeper connection to the dragons and a deeper connection to Andana, potentially like this blood sharing that we're obsessed with now.
I had a theory about it too.
Go on, then.
So, this is... my other theory about this, and it's kind of very similar to this, but this is how far my theory goes. So Mami Sorengel, she was attacked for something. At that time, they didn't know what it was. They thought it maybe was like a monster or something. They didn't know what it was, Venon, but it was killing her. That Sorengel, he was studying about feather tails, dragon magic, and all that kind of stuff.
And the first six. He was researching the first six, because Mommy Sorengel tells him that. Tells Violet that.
So he knew about, there was like a really powerful ancient magic and this kind of stuff. There was like a special interest in feather tails as well. But this is like the twist on my theory. When he found kind of like the cure, like just a temporary cure for Mommy Sorangel. He didn't find that in the blood of the dragon tail. He found that in an egg. So he found an egg because he was doing this research about feather tails. Mm. He couldn't find the feather tail, but he found an egg that he was just in the bell. He was studying this egg, so he knew where the egg was. The scales of dragons, eggshell, they are really hard to break, but they're not unbreakable. If you have something really sharp or you have the right equipment, you can break it, you can perforate.
But it didn't.
So my theory is that he using this dragon egg to make like a little hole to extract a little bit of the stuff that was
like
inside.
Fluid.
Yes. So he made...
But they're metal. How did he get to sort of like drill through it or something?
Yeah, could be like a manual drill. You just something this, and you just twisting your hands a little bit. And it's
and then
a
there's
drill.
A little hole so she could hear all the things that were being said about this ride. Yeah, I've read it before. I've heard it before. The egg thing.
Yes, egg thing, but right? That's the thing. That it makes it not directly from the blood. It makes it from the fluids or the dragon, the dragon egg. That
the
dragon
egg
is no, but that dragon egg is Andarnas.
Yeah,
and that's why it had this connection with Violet.
I always assumed it was like Andarna's blood or something from the egg. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's directly from Andarna, and this helps. So Violet has this connection with Andarna from the beginning since she was born. That's why she is born with silver hair. So it's where the Andarna was the gold one. And Violet the silver, because
so
like
I
first
think,
and second.
I think the silver hair is more to do with the fact that Lilith was draining her. So I feel like that was more to do with the problem rather than the cure. Mm-hmm. So because we talk about like when a venom draining the colour, a venom draining the land, I feel like if she'd carried on, she'd had a full head of silver hair. If she'd have carried on, then Violet wouldn't have made it.
Yeah, but when they're talking about venom draining, like the colors and everything, it should be white, not silver.
It's brown. It's normally brown, not silver. But I do. Mm. I feel like it's more to do with the fact. But we'll see, won't we?
Yeah. The thing is that for me, the Andarna has all that connection with Violet. Then when Finn Ryerson was captured and when started to say that yes, there's venom, there's white venom. That is Orangel was there. So he started to like connect all the dots there. Oh yeah, that monster was a venom. So everything is real. Then when he started to trying to find a solution for Mommy Orangel because she's still affected, he started to make questions, he started to do like a lot of stuff. Mm. They got killed by Marhon. And then when he got killed, Andarna, she was feeling everything the Violet was feeling. She know everything the Violet know. And then it's when Andarna knew that it's time to come out because Violet's going to be in danger.
No.
Because I think it happened two years. Daddy Sorangel died 2 years before Andarna.
I thought Daddy Sorangel died 6 months ago.
No. Since she went to the parapet.
Or a year ago. It was a year.
I was pretty sure it was, so yeah, I need to have a look to that, because for me, like, the timeline must that he dies, and the moment that he dies, Andarna hatched.
No, Andarna hatched before. She knows his, Andarna knows Violet's dad for sure.
Yeah, okay.
Right, can we read this bit? Because I've got it now. I fight my racing heart. Last year, I might have accepted death, but this year, I'm bonded to one of the deadliest dragons on the continent. Right, italics. So she's speaking mind to mind here with Bade.
Yes.
That's right. You might hate me, but I belong to Tern. She's speaking mind to mind with him. So what gives her, one, the balls to do that? She's got dragon blood. Two, the ability to do that. She's got dragon blood.
Mm-hmm.
There's something you can't. I don't think you can just talk mind to mind with a dragon.
I don't know if because you're a rider and you know how to talk to your dragon, you can use exactly the same technique.
No,
to
because if you think about
a dragon,
how she talks to Zayden, she has to aim it at the.
Yeah, like a mentally.
Yeah,
connection
you have a mental connection.
Yes.
I'm totally obsessed with this theory now that she's got some dragon connection. We know that that then means that she, that Bade backs off.
Yes, but then there's other people they don't make it, and between those people is Thomas.
Well, she does. Bade draws back, then darts forward with an open jaw, snapping her teeth shut directly in front of my nose and pelting my face with saliva. So she's not willing to risk the wrath of Tern, but she still wants to scare her.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because it's clear that Dan is not scared of Violet. He's scared of Tern. Okay, so chapter 15, they're still lost, but they're having a better relationship.
Can we do the epigraph? Whoa.
Okay.
Slow down.
Mrs. Epigraph, come on.
This is Brennan, the Book of Brennan, page 96. There's a course second year that I can't tell you about, other than to say it's hell. My advice, don't piss off anyone else's dragon. Whose dragon did Brennan piss off?
Nolan dragons, maybe?
One potential option.
I mean, they were in the same year, so that's the only one that I can tell from Brennan's side.
I don't know if they were in the same year.
Should be, because you don't get like such a... Well, I guess Sid and Violet, they have a really good relationship. They are different.
Yeah, and Dane and that, whatever her name was, that knobhead, Amber Mavis.
Amber Mavis.
Yeah, I don't think there's any evidence that they were in the same year, but just wonder whose dragon he pissed off.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's Tern, because Tern doesn't particularly like him.
Yeah, maybe that was just the beginning.
Yeah. Over 1,000 cadets in the infantry quadrant. We learn a bit more about the infantry quadrant. They don't die as often as riders, but the coming war will devour them. Mm-hmm. They're basically fodder, frontline fodder. And like that, I don't have a lot to say about this chapter, although land nav seems awful. Like, I love the idea of the course. I think it's really important. I think it's actually a very useful course for them to do. More useful than physics. I'm just thinking, like, physics. When you learn to ride a horse, you don't do the maths, do you? You don't sit and think, like, power of speed velocity equals distance speed over time. Yeah. Like, force equals mass times acceleration. You just, yeah, like, learn to ride a horse.
Yeah, I think maybe it's just because Rebecca Jarrow's husband is a pilot, so he might do this kind of stuff when you're flying, because you're having a machine, but in this case you have a dragon. Yeah. So the dragon is the one who decides what it's going to do.
Say though that she checked the physics stuff. She always checked with her husband.
Yeah, sure, but that's the thing. Yeah, that's perfect. If you are piloting a helicopter, dragon is like,
And just like, she's carrying textbooks in her bag. So all the way through this thing, they've all been carrying their like lesson books.
Yes.
It's just annoying. They have rabbit, don't they? Because we know that infantry are pretty good at catching.
Hunting.
Yeah.
Obviously, they had to be like really good just surviving in any kind of condition. Like I said, they're more like army. So they had to be in mountains and survive for the environment and the stuff.
Wasn't there a moment where... This might be later in the book, where they look down and the infantry cadets are camping.
I think that was in fourth wing, isn't it?
Was it?
Yeah.
Can't remember.
By the end of the year or something? Can't remember. Like, riders, nothing happened, but infantry, they were like camping. Yeah, I think it was fourth wing.
No, because you didn't get the end of the year in fourth wing. You got the end of the year in Iron Flame. So, cadet life debt. So Violet saved, in the previous chapter, saved the life of one of the healers, and he now owes her a life debt, which appears to be a thing in the Imperium universe, just like it is in the Harry Potter universe.
Yes. And he made a roast dinner, rabbit.
Yeah, a roasted rabbit, but he says it's the least she can do. It's the least he can do. He owes her his life. And that does come back later in the book. He has already, by the end of the book, paid off his life debt by healing the hands of Auric after they steal the book.
Yes.
So she says, take... I don't know who she's talking to, I can't remember. She says, we'll get to that part later.
Mm-hmm.
Take Auric to the Healer's Quadrant and ask for cadet life debt. and he does it.
Yes. To be honest, in this chapter, the only thing that caught my attention was the Rhea and Violet, they're having a chat. And
she's suspicious.
Yeah, we know that something's going on, and she knows as well there's Violet, the one that is not telling anything. And then when Violet's preparing to say a lie, she even said that she feels how her stomach is twist because she knows that she has to lie. And then Ruiz straight away, she says, don't insult her with lies. Don't insult me with lies because I know that it's not what is happening. But that was pretty much by the end of this exercise because then they were rescued.
Yeah, they failed Lannav, Haddon, Woods. They were there all along. The scribe knew it. Violet should be better at this. And yes. It comes back to the fact that her foundations have been rocked. She's not the same person she was last year. She has found out basically her life is a lie. Scribes can't be trusted. I think she probably did trust her mother. She didn't get on with her, but she respected her and she ultimately loves her mum. But she now knows that her mum is lying. There's this, and obviously you know how Violet deals with lies. She can't cope with them.
Mm-hmm.
So her foundation has been rocked. And I think that's why she's not good at the things that she should be good at this year.
It's definitely a massive difference. I think you mentioned it before, the beginning, Seiden was surprised about how easy it was for her just doing stuff to having the difference between finding the safe place and then shield, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And this year, she's kind of just surviving. She's not really good on something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a couple more things. She asks, why the hell would leadership be developing ways to weaken us?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if they're developing ways to weaken them. Are they actually doing the right thing? Probably not, because it's leadership. But are they actually trying to do the right thing by preparing them potentially for venom poison? Because we know that venom poison takes away your bond, because Violet experienced that at the end of Fourth Wing at Resen. And I wonder if it's maybe leadership's way of trying to attempt to prepare them for what's out there.
For me, there's just two possible scenarios here. Either, yes, they're doing kind of a preparation to the future soldiers about what would happen if they lose all connection and they're turning just into regular people, not writers anymore. The other possible solution is maybe they're just a test. So they start to come in with this new thing. They don't know exactly how it works. They need people with magic.
Yeah, but why test it on the most powerful squad? Isn't that a risk?
Well, they need somebody powerful, because Venin are way more powerful. So
yeah, but wouldn't you ramp it up? Wouldn't you test it on the weakest squads first?
No, because then
if it
works in the weakest, but then you give it to the stronger, it doesn't work in the strongest because...
Yeah, but what if they died? Wouldn't you prefer to lose a weaker rider than it? If you look at
I don't think they would die. They just...
They might.
It won't work, I think. So I think that was the only race it works or it doesn't. Because affecting is just the magic, not the body.
Maybe. You never know, though, with medical trials.
Yeah.
So it was just that question, why the hell would leadership be developing ways to weaken us?
Yes.
I don't think they are. I think they're developing ways to weaken Venin. but conveniently it works on riders and they can use that to try and prepare them.
Yeah.
I'm giving the leadership the benefit of the doubt here.
It's working as well for future riders. They're going to be a problem for leadership. Sitting riders are just going a drink and let's go to discuss what's going on here.
But once you've had it once, nothing's going to get past Violet a second time. Mm-hmm. We find out that Tern did get to see Sigale, but only after Bade left. He went to see Sigale. Mm-hmm. Why on earth didn't Tern just intervene? He was flying around there. Mm-hmm. Was he not allowed?
I think he wasn't part of the exercise, so he needed to just
keep the distance. The Empyrean would have punished him if he'd... But I think if there was any chance that Bade was that close to Violet, he'd have snapped Bade's neck off. He doesn't care.
Yes, I think he was constantly checking Bade, but he was just keeping the distance to not interfere in this exercise. But Bade, it was completely sure that if one move, bad move, and that's it.
Yeah. And then the chapter ends with Violet having an ominous feeling that she won't see Zayden in a week. And she's absolutely right. Yeah.
Yes. The other interesting thing about this is that Violet couldn't feel anything about Tern, but Tern was aware about everything that she was feeling or hearing. Mm. It was just like one communication.
Couldn't communicate.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Chapter 16.
Chapter 16.
Epigraph. We get a letter, another recovered correspondence from Lieutenant Zayden Ryerson. My dad hoped I would go into the infantry like he did. He thought riders were pompous pricks, and in defense, we really are. I was so shocked when I read this epigraph. I was convinced that Zayden's dad must be a rider. Mm-hmm. I spoiled this for you. You already knew it before you read this. But can you imagine how surprised you were when I told you that he was infantry?
Before that, I was, nearly convinced that he was a rider.
So, the reason Zayden's dad was infantry, which we find out later, was because he was noble. And the king is concerned that too much power in the hands of someone who's already got a seat is too scary a thing for a king, because they might overthrow you.
Yeah, too risky.
Who is Zayden's granddad? I did think originally that Zayden's granddad, who was in the Riders Quadrant, who was bonded to Sigale previously, I just assumed it must have been his mum's dad because his dad's dad couldn't have been a rider. He must have been infantry because he was a noble line. But thinking about the fact that the rider on record was a great uncle, not a granddad, I think we have an Oryx situation where Zayden's dad's dad had a brother. Mm-hmm. His dad's dad pretended to be the younger brother, enrolled in the Riders Quadrant before it was too late. And that's when he had his dad. Mm-hmm. He was then raised by his uncle, who became the nobleman. But he was never actually his dad. So it makes total sense if you draw it out. The granddad who died in the Rider Quadrant, who was bonded to Sigale, had a brother. He was supposed to be in line for the throne. Not the throne of Tirindor. My chair, my house, my chair, my woman, throne. That one. The very same. And he wanted to be a rider, but he knew he couldn't be. So he pretended to be his brother, signed up before it, and then was found out too late, or was never found out, had a baby. Mm-hmm. The baby was raised by the brother.
Yeah.
And that's why the rider on record was his great uncle, not his granddad. Trust me, all works out. It's perfect. You don't have to.
Yeah, we need
listeners,
to make
you don't have to check.
I think we need to make a reel about this and like use the drawing software.
Yeah,
like,
I'll draw it out.
Simple and clear.
Yeah, but it makes you immediately think, well, it can't be his dad's dad because he can't be a rider, he must be infantry, so it must be his mum's dad. But I just don't think it is because of the uncle thing, mm-hmm. because of the great uncle thing.
Yes.
That's all I have to say on that, really. Riders are kind of pompous pricks, aren't they? Especially Riddick in that last chapter. Don't hate me.
Yeah. Because he thinks there's better than infantry. And then he say, yeah, when we are in the dragon, we're literally above everyone.
That is true. You've got to give him that. We are literally flying above you.
Yeah.
A few things caught my attention in this chapter. We get the mention of stories. Stories can change depending on who tells them.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So Violet is talking with Yesenia. And then talking about a little bit about everything. Yesenia starts to realize that there's something wrong with the archives.
Mm-hmm.
I think she started to figure out that, yes, the story is dependent who is telling.
But I'm going to stop you there.
Mm-hmm.
Who is telling the story?
Yesenia.
Exactly. Please don't make Yesenia bad, Rebecca. She's got to be good. She's the only one that we know actually survives the series.
Well, yeah, by the end of everything, she's the one who managed to write or transcribe this book. So this is another hint about Violet's core, because Yesenia, she knew there was something wrong when Violet was asking for these books because she has a debate or something like this. So is Yesenia the one who said that you are a terrible liar,
You're
Violet?
A terrible liar.
Yes, so... another hint about Violet in the truth. So I found that was like something to mark again.
Yeah, another one. And in the bonus Zayden POV chapter, there was another massive hint that she is going to be a truthsayer. I cannot imagine a world where she's anything else.
Yeah.
I can't. She's a truthsayer. And if she's not... we've been trolled by Rebecca Yarros. She didn't record Violet's request. Why? First, because she didn't want to be embarrassed because she couldn't find it, which is, scribes aren't supposed to feel emotions like that.
Mm-hmm.
Then because she couldn't find it. No record of Wyvern, no record of folklore like that at all. She sent requests to other libraries. That is super dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Because basically, she asked for forgotten folklore from border regions for a personal project. If those border libraries had written to Markham to say, you have a scribe that is searching for books that appear to not be in your library,
yes.
She'd be dead. Yesenia wants the fables in return, but we don't quite know that yet. So yeah, she says she wants for a favour. So, Sloane... on the mat, she is not a good fighter.
No, she had no training at all, so she can't be good.
Violet is watching Sloane on the mat, though. We have Violet reliving or thinking about the letters that Zayden has written to her, a conversation with Rhee about Nolan. So we find out that Zayden has known Aya since he was 10. Her mother was serving in the government of Tirindor, holding a council seat even though she was a rider. Riders were discouraged from holding their family seats. Too much power in one person terrifies any king. So this is where we find out about the reason why Fenriason was in the infantry, but also that there was an exception with Aya's mum, although Aya's not going to live much longer. Womp womp.
Mm-hmm.
Nolan, we find out, is with an air wielder. We find out that Riddick and Rhee have been chatting about the suspicions with Nolan.
He was looking bad. He was with a wind wielder.
Yeah, he was with an air wielder. I'm just convinced that this is because he was holding him off the ground to stop him from channeling.
Oh, that's what you think.
Yeah, what do you think?
Well, I was thinking because Nolan is overdoing with his signet. He's getting burned out. He's getting burning. And then they will literally do like a fan.
Pulling him down. That is so funny. I can't believe you thought that.
Yeah, I mean, you need an air, isn't it? You're burning down, you need like a fan or something.
Oh so my
you
God, that is so funny. I thought
something
it was
useful.
I thought it was really obvious. It was just holding him off the ground to stop him from channeling.
I don't know.
Do they have to have physical contact with the ground to channel from the ground?
I don't think so, because they can do magic as well when they're in the wyverns, you know, when they're like kind of like riders.
Oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Oh, so now maybe my theory is not that bad, isn't it?
Oh my God, that is so funny. Maybe. Wouldn't you have an ice wielder?
Don't need like something really cool. You want like proper air drop, like
like feeling it's nice and airbly.
Yeah. Just imagine that scene all in there with the hair just like blowing.
Oh my goodness. That's really funny. But you're right, they can channel from the ground.
Yeah.
Without touching the ground. I thought that was obvious. So that's what he was saying.
Asking to the people what they think. Like, just to keep away from
so
the ground.
So many questions
a personal
for Rebecca Harris. Next time I get a chance, I'm going to be like, what was that air wielder doing? Was he being a ventilator?
Yeah, personal fan.
Riddick thinks he's torturing people and mending them, which I think is... So Riddick thinks Varys is torturing people and Nolan is mending them, which is a bit of foreshadowing for what happens later. Violet says, I don't think so. I think they would do that in the main interrogation chambers under the school. So we get to see those later as well. So that whole conversation is just foreshadowing. Violet knowing that Rhee would help her and she feels bad again for lying or withholding information. And she said she'd help me break into the fucking archives if I wanted. As if they're not going to do that in a few chapters' time.
Yeah. The other thing that happens here is that Violet helps Ellie and sister on the challenge using her old tricks. The one that was working so good for her at the beginning.
I'm sorry, but the way she does this is so obvious.
Yeah.
How does
so
nobody
weird.
Notice?
Yeah. But, I mean, apparently it worked.
She, like, blew. She waited for the opponent to breathe in and she, like, blew this powder in her face. Surely someone noticed that.
Yeah. And, like, the person who was there, who was breathing, they're like, what are you doing? Why are you trying me this?
And then all of a sudden, bleh.
Yeah.
Doesn't she get really dizzy and Sloane just punches her in the face? Sloane is so wildly confident. Like, how is she so confident when she's so shit?
I think she's just not aware.
Like, no self-awareness. And she said, if it's Malak's will that I join my brother, then so be it.
Yeah. Foreshadowing, maybe.
I think she's going to die like Nolan. No. Mm. I think she's going to die like Nalen. Siphoning back the power that the Venon stole and put it into the ground and overheating because it's too much.
Yeah.
I think she might die to save Zayden.
Did she have reason to die for Zayden? Because for her, Zayden was the one who ordered Liam to protect Violet.
You can see evidence later in the book that Sloane will do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's hard. She gets upset when she siphons Lilith. We don't know if she's killed her, but I do think she has, but anyway.
Yeah.
She does the right thing, and I think she'll do the right thing.
Yeah.
I think she will have a reason.
She's a Maori in the end, so.
Yeah, aww. Liam, he was amazing. I don't need to be part of your development era. When Violet's talking to her, she's like, get over yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You will train. You will show up. And every day you show up, you'll get a letter. I don't need to be part of your development era. Just sounds like it could be a Taylor Swift lyric. Do you think it's fair for Violet to withhold the letters from Liam?
It's definitely not fair because those letters belong to
Sloane.
And just think that maybe it's one of those cases that just because she avoids letters to get burned, then belongs to Violet.
They absolutely belong to Sloane. How would Violet and Zayden have known that they were in his room if Liam hadn't asked them as part of his dying wish to Zayden to go and get them to Sloane? Obviously, Zayden and Liam had this conversation that Violet wasn't aware of. Mm-hmm. That must have happened then. Otherwise, they'd have had no idea that they were in his room.
Yeah.
So he must have said, get those letters to Sloane. I don't think it's fair because Sloane could have died at any point and not had the rest of those letters. But I do agree with Violet that Liam would more than approve.
Yeah, true.
We get Imogen understanding why Zayden fell for her as well and saying that she bets that she keeps him constantly annoyed, which is brilliant. She's like reveling in Zayden's frustration.
Yeah, really like that part as well. Imogen's like finding this so funny at the same time.
Yeah. Can we talk about the unabridged history of the first six, which is the classified book that mm-hmm. Jessenia gives? Are you ready to talk about that?
Yeah.
This is the most interesting bit of the chapter for me. General Darum, so it doesn't tell Violet a lot, which mm-hmm. is, I think, a hint that it does tell Violet a lot.
Mm-hmm.
It simply lists General Darrymore as the enemy and the Isle Kingdoms as the allies. And it talks about the complex interpersonal relationships between the first six. So that there's so much in this. General Darrymore as the enemy. You know that we believe General Darrymore is still the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
He's the general that has waited centuries for a power like Violet's.
Mm-hmm.
And the Isle Kingdoms as allies. I believe we will go to the Isle Kingdoms in Onyx Storm.
Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, do we go to the Isle Kingdoms in Onyx Storm or is it something that comes back later? But I think we're at the point now where we need allies.
Mm-hmm.
So I am thinking we'll go to the Isle Kingdoms and they will become the allies. We talked about the complex interpersonal relationships between the riders. And you know that we think that there was something between Warwick and Lyra, but ultimately General Darrymore and Lyra.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why putting the wards up cost her everything, because it defeated, or she could no longer see General Darrymore. Which is just a theory, but it feels to me like, again, mentioning the complex interpersonal relationships, General Darrymore, it feels to me like there's some kind of relationship between Lyra and General Darrymore.
Yes.
We learn then that the reason that the wards were located at Buzgaeth was because of the Green's reasonable, more defensive nature and the better connection to the magic.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the reason why they chose Navarre, which we learn is the Vale is the ancestral hatching grounds of the Green Dragons.
Yes.
Just a thought that I had about the Isle Kingdoms.
Mm-hmm.
What if Zayden's mum was from the Isle Kingdoms? Mm-hmm. Because you know that we know that Fenn isn't above arranging marriages or arranging, what do you call them? Yeah, arranging marriages so that you have an allegiance or an alliance.
Mm-hmm.
He arranged for Zayden and Kat to be betrothed so that he could get an alliance with Corden.
Mm-hmm.
What if Zayden's mum is from the Isle Kingdoms and he was attempting, there was an arrangement to have a child.
Mm-hmm.
We know that there was an arrangement to have a child, and if the child survived to be 10, the mother could leave. What if she was from the Isle Kingdoms and the purpose of that arrangement was to reignite that allegiance or the alliance between the Isle Kingdoms and Tirindor?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really,
so are we going to go to the Isle Kingdoms and are we going to meet Zayden's mum there? Is she some kind of royalty of the Isle Kingdoms?
Interesting.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, and then we get Varish. I think she's on her way back, is she?
Yes, obviously, Dissinegi with that bow, she give her the fables so she can give her a story. Then she is preparing to go to Samara, and then Varish is waiting for her. Check her stuff again, and then remind her that he's expecting to see Andarna soon.
I guess I'll meet your little golden next week. So, in preparation for this, I was listening to the audiobook, and Rebecca Soler, the narrator, says golden in as if it's in italics. I guess I'll meet your little golden next week, she says. Mm-hmm. And I've checked, and in the physical print book, which I also read in preparation, the word golden isn't in italics. But I thought that was another hint for the fact that he knew she wasn't golden, because he was saying, you're the gold, I'll meet your golden next week, but it's not. False alarm.
A lot of emphasis on golden.
Yeah, she does. In the audiobook, she puts a lot of emphasis on that word, but it doesn't have that indication within the book. So
here we go, feedback, Rebecca.
No, I think she's brilliant. And I'm so glad that she's going to be doing Onyx Storm.
Yeah, I think it's a good combination, Rebecca and Telly Hamilton, isn't it?
Teddy Hamilton,
the voice is really good for Saiden.
Yeah. No, I disagree. Sorry, Teddy Hamilton.
Disagree with?
I do. I think he's a bit... I'm sorry, Teddy, but he sounds a bit mature. He sounds a bit older than Saiden would sound. I don't know. To me, he doesn't sound like Saiden. He doesn't sound like Saiden looks.
Okay.
Anyway, Teddy Hamilton, unfortunately, he's a great narrator, but he's not my Zayden. And isn't that why fantasy, isn't that why books are so great? Because you can imagine who you want to imagine.
Can make it perfect for you.
Yeah, exactly. And we get a bit of a callback to the fact that, to the end of the last chapter, where she gets that feeling that she's not going to see Zayden.
He said like a comment or something that she doesn't get it, but once in Samara she understands that she won't see Saiden that weekend either.
Yeah, because he's on 24-hour duty in the operation center and she doesn't have clearance. And this shows Varish's connection to the arsehole that's in charge at Samara. Obviously he's contacted him and has arranged this.
Yes.
As punishment. And I guess the operation center must be a place where the riders are. So the dragon's off because Sigale gets to see
Tern.
Yeah. So they're not flying. He's obviously just in the, like, maybe the strategic room, strategy room in the operation center where they're working out kind of strategic plans. And he's on 24-hour duty, which sucks.
Yeah.
So she just hangs around in his room.
I wonder how does it work, like 24 hours duty, so obviously he will sleep there as well, or was 24 hours that he not going to be able to do anything else, just work.
Maybe they sleep and it's like a on call. If they have an attack, then they're the ones that are ready.
Yeah.
I don't know why you can't sleep in your room. Maybe he doesn't sleep. Maybe they don't sleep. Maybe that's the thing.
He doesn't sleep anyway.
Know what he was doing there. Yeah, he doesn't sleep. He hasn't slept since his dad left to start the apostasy. So that is chapters 13 to 16. Next week we will be going into...
Yes, and into 20.
I just counted on my fingers. That is correct. it's starting to get good. I mean, a lot of people think that Iron Flame is a slow burn. I tend to agree that not a lot happens in these first chapters. But when you pick it apart, there's so much foreshadowing, so many clues. And I am sure we've missed a million moments of foreshadowing for Onyx Storm. But the more I read again and again, the more excited I get.
Yes, it's one of those good things that you read the one saying, it's just text, random stuff.
But then when you read the whole thing,
it's just, oh, wow.
Yeah, it's a great story.
I should see that coming. Yeah.
It's just not as fast-paced and adrenaline-fueling as Fourth Wing until the second part, and then and it gets really good.
Yeah, but you know, that even with Fourth Wing, I had a little bit of struggle at the beginning when you were like telling me, oh, you need to read it, you need to read it, and yeah, I started reading it. But I wasn't getting the story until Threshing.
Yeah.
I think my first moment when I start to like feel actually hooked by the book is just one page before Tern appears. But before that, it just felt like meh.
Yeah.
I mean, like, it's good, but no, like, I didn't get it. Like,
no, the, I was hooked right hype? From the beginning of Fourth Wing. I was like, I knew that I was going to love it. When it got to Threshing, that was when I didn't even want to leave the house. I just wanted to carry on. I couldn't even put it down. But I loved it before that. But, yeah, I think there is that quite a lot of... It's quite a common opinion that Iron Flame is a slower burn. But honestly, if you read all this detail, it's just... Yeah, we're picking it apart line by line just to try and get some clues from Onyx Storm. And I am sure there are some. So, thank you for listening to Faithfully Fantasy,
the husband and wife podcast talking all things Iron Flame.
Join us again next week for our run through of chapters 17 to 20. But in the meantime, you can check out more stuff on our social media. So on our Instagram, our TikTok, we are at Faithfully Fantasy Pod. You can also check out our website, www.faithfullyfantasy.com, where there is a little bit more about us. You can access previous episodes, just like you can on Spotify, YouTube, blah, 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 blah. you know where to find us, because you've already found us. So we look forward to diving into the next set of chapters next week, and have a great week.
See you next time.